It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Afghanistan's election crisis and what it means for the transfer of power and stability in that country. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Afghanistan remains mired in a political crisis over who will be the next president. President Hamid Karzai is stepping down after 12 years in power, constitutionally unable to run again. But the UN-supervised audit to find Hamid Karzai's successor has not been easy. The April 5th election resulted in two rival candidates, Ashraf Ghani, a former finance minister educated in the United States, and former Afghan Foreign Minister Abdullah Abdullah. But neither of them received a clear majority of the votes, so now they are locked in a standoff over the results of the June runoff. Both Abdullah Abdullah and Ashraf Ghani have claimed victory, and both have alleged widespread fraud. A new president was supposed to take office on August 2nd. The swearing-in was postponed after U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry intervened in July and brokered a deal between the two contenders to form a national unity government. However, so far they failed to reach a concrete deal. Both candidates committed themselves to signing a critical bilateral security agreement with the United States, which President Karzai had refused to sign, which would allow some American troops to remain in Afghanistan in a training and advisory role after 2014. Meanwhile, President Hamid Karzai said that his successor should take office on September 2nd, especially since NATO members are to discuss their commitments to Afghanistan at a September 4th summit. But that is unlikely to occur because the UN says the recount will not be concluded before September 10th. Ashraf Ghani placed first in the June runoff. Mr. Abdullah has alleged that hundreds of thousands of ballots were fraudulent and should be thrown out. He has recently pulled his observers out of the UN-supervised audit, citing concerns over fraud, creating increased uncertainty over the formation of a unity government in time for the inauguration. Well, for more on Afghanistan's disputed election and what it means for the transfer of power and future of Afghanistan, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Lisa Curtis is a senior research fellow at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation, that's a think tank here in Washington, and Ambassador Omar Samad. He's Senior Central Asia Fellow at the New America Foundation, that's a policy group also based in Washington, and Ambassador Samad is Afghanistan's former ambassador to France and Canada. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, Ambassador Samad, let me begin with you. We, of course, learned that Abdullah Abdullah has decided to boycott the internationally brokered audit of the disputed vote. Why did he pull out?
Well, it's a story, as cumbersome as it sounds, that started out in April after the first round of elections in Afghanistan. And it was very clear to many in Afghanistan, including Abdullah's team, that after the runoff in June, major fraud had taken place in Afghanistan. And after some analysis of the situation and after investigating and providing evidence that was on hand, the international community through the United Nations, as well as later the U.S. government through Secretary of State John Kerry, to some extent agreed with Abdullah's assertion that fraud had taken place. And so a mechanism was put in place to rectify this problem. It seems that he's still not satisfied with the mechanism and the way this is happening and taking place.
Indeed. So the problem was addressed, but he's still dissatisfied with this UN brokered audit. Lisa Curtis, how do you see this latest turn of events, you know, just days before this slated inauguration, which is obviously going to be postponed for a few more days? But why did Abdullah just, again, withdraw his observers? What are his demands?
Well, look, I think Dr. Abdullah has reason to be angry. It does look like fraud likely took place in the second round of elections. And if you just look at some of the numbers, for instance, the IEC, the Independent Election Commission, says that there were 8 million valid votes in the second round compared to only 6.6 million votes in the first round. And most of the new voting came from the eastern provinces of Coast and Paktika. And there, it looks like they're recording, you know, many more women voters, which seems suspicious because this is a very conservative area. Women are generally not voting in these areas. So there's a lot of suspicions surrounding these new numbers that have come up with the second round. So I think while he has reason to be angry, he also has to think about the future of Afghanistan. And the fact is, this is a UN-supervised recount, and there are international observers involved in this. So it does have some credibility to it. It's not as if it's being fully conducted by Afghan leaders. So I think, you know, whereas one can understand his anger, we have to see some compromise with the situation and living up to the agreement that Secretary Kerry brokered between the two leaders, which was essentially that whatever the results were from the recount, there would be a unity government in which the loser would basically serve as a chief executive. So I think that is what they should be moving toward.
We're turning to you, Ambassador Samad, to talk about this unity government. To what extent does the boycott of the audit by Abdullah, and of course we know that Ghani's observers also withdrew so that it would have the parity, although the audit will go on, presumably, to what extent does this boycott now affect this U.S. brokered agreement that calls for Ghani and Abdullah to share power?
You see, the U.S. brokered agreement has two facets. One is technical, one is political. The political track is ongoing. There has been no change in trying to figure out how to share power and how to put together a government of national unity. But on the technical side, there are still some issues. It is unclear for Abdullah's side, for example, as to what the terms and criteria for invalidating bad ballots constitute. And secondly, Secretary of State Kerry and his agreement are somewhat broad in scope. They do not really get to the nitty-gritty of trying to figure out what's a good ballot and what's a bad ballot. But for the Afghans, it does really matter to an extent as to whether a ballot is valid or not. And how do you differentiate between those and what do you do with it? Do you just look at it or do you then try to figure out whether it was part of stuffing or whether it was part of ballots that whose numbers in a box were altered? A lot of different things have happened and have raised suspicions. And I think that on one hand, one needs to make sure that the process moves forward and we end up with a credible result. On the other hand, we do not want to empower someone in Afghanistan who would not have the kind of credibility and legitimacy that is required in order to govern effectively. It is very important for everyone to realize that effective governance in Afghanistan not only means sharing power because of Afghanistan's conditions today, but it also means that the Afghan people, those who voted, those who took the risk to go, men and women, to a village, to a polling station, were under attack by the Taliban, that their vote at the end of the day did count.
Turning back to you, Lisa Curtis, to what extent do you think this boycott of the UN-supervised audit by Abdullah will affect the unity government plans? I mean, are the two interrelated? You know, this is the question.
It's certainly difficult to know at this stage. It certainly is a negative development that Dr. Abdullah has pulled out his observers from the recount process. But we don't know exactly what the strategy or the plans are moving forward. Look, both Dr. Abdullah and Dr. Ashraf Ghani have good reputations. They have interacted with Western leaders. They want what's best for Afghanistan. So one would hope that they would be able to come to some kind of compromise solution ultimately. So whether or not Dr. Abdullah is bargaining for more powers, if he believes that, in fact, Dr. Ghani will win the election after the UN recount, and he's trying to bargain for more power as this chief executive position, which is part of the Kerry brokered agreement, I think that's unclear right now. But I think when all is said and done, that both leaders need to see that if one of them tries to cheat the other one out of some kind of power in this unity government, that both stand to lose. Right now, with the preliminary results, it looks like there was a 1 million vote difference in the election. But if the recount narrows that margin, then I think you can make the argument even greater that they need to make this unity government a reality and that this chief executive role should have some kind of power. They'll need to work out some kind of power arrangement.
Back to you, Ambassador Samad. Analysts also believe, like Lisa, that perhaps Abdullah pulling his observers out of the supervised audit is a ploy or a political decision based on the fact that he thinks he will not get the votes to actually win outright and is just using it as a way to negotiate for better power sharing for him and his team. Do you see that as a possibility? And the other factor is that some say even if all the fraudulent ballots are thrown out, that it's very likely that Ashraf Ghani would still be ahead.
Well, let me say, first of all, that from my reading of Abdullah, to the extent that I know him, this is not a ploy and this is not a tactic, that this is based on principle. Several weeks ago, he promised people who were ready to go out on the streets to not do so and to give him time and a chance to work things out in a diplomatic manner. But he also told them that he's very much going to defend their vote. He firmly believed he had won in the first round, as much as others may think otherwise. Many people in Afghanistan believe him. And this is why it's so critical that while the two candidates work on a political deal, which is going to be crucial at some time, very soon, that we end up with a result, regardless of who wins or loses, a result that is seen as being closest to reality. That is what the Afghans want, and I think they deserve it. I don't think anyone should start assuming otherwise, regardless of whether they're pro-Ghani or pro-Abdullah. For the future of this country, for the stability that it requires, for the progress that it has made, and for whatever investment the international community has made, it is not really a question of giving up or trying to accommodate someone. It's a question of trying to figure out in the most realistic manner, in the most fairest manner possible, given the situation, who the loser and who the winner is. And so this is where he sees issues that a lot of other people, technically speaking, see with the process. There are major flaws, but there are definitely flaws in the system, and the recount system and the invalidation system.
But even still, I mean, you have a UN-supervised audit, a more impartial, thorough audit I don't think has ever been conducted, perhaps, in the history of elections. And so the question is this. Even though he's pulled out his observers, will he still accept the results of the audit? Because it's going to go forward. And while they are waiting for these results, is he and Ghani, are they negotiating over the power sharing?
I don't think that he has left this process altogether. I think that Abdullah is trying to point to a very specific problem that exists with the way the system is invalidating ballots.
Are you saying then that the count will go forward and he will have lost, you know, numerically? Because I don't like this winner-loser, because presumably if they're going to work together, maybe Ghani will win numerically, but Abdullah has a huge following and the whole idea of this unity government is for them to get together and to share the powers. But the point is, numerically speaking, if the audit shows once it's finished that Abdullah has lost numerically, will he accept those results?
I cannot speak for him. I don't speak for his team. But what I can tell you is that the political track can probably offset that. But what we are seeing is Ashraf Ghani's team basically not willing to share power the way that Abdullah thinks it should be done, on a more equitable, equal basis. What we are hearing from Kabul, from the two teams, is that Ashraf Ghani is insisting on continuing on the same footpath as Hamid Karzai, with full power in the presidency and almost nothing else for anybody else.
Do you see it that way, Lisa Curtis? Because I've read that the definition of the chief executive has been a bit of a sticking point. That would be the number two position. If the count shows that Ghani wins numerically, then that would be Abdullah's position. I was under the impression that the two more or less otherwise agreed on the other issues. What other issues are there?
Well, I don't think we have seen agreement on the details. And Ashraf Ghani has not been clear about what a chief executive role would entail. So I think they're both kind of holding their cards close to their chest. They're waiting until the recount is finished. But the problem is that makes Dr. Abdullah insecure, as he believes that, as you said, numerically, Ashraf Ghani may end up still getting more votes, even if the margin is narrowed after the recount. So I think we don't know the details of how a power sharing would work. A lot of people are skeptical that it can work, but I would say, frankly, they don't have a choice. Look, both of these leaders are against the Taliban. They know what life was like under the Taliban in Afghanistan. They both have worked in the Karzai administration. So they need to focus on what it means if they don't come to an agreement for the country, because certainly the Taliban will take advantage of the political instability, which could turn into ethnic conflict. This is not good for the country. And it's the same as we see in Iraq. In Iraq, they realized that they needed to go for this unity government to be able to counter ISIS, which is making gains in that country. So we're facing a very similar situation in Afghanistan. And if these two leaders, Dr. Abdullah and Dr. Ghani, don't want to see Afghanistan fall to the Taliban down the line, like we're seeing with ISIS in Iraq, then I think they need to come to some compromise power-sharing agreement. You know, none of this zero-sum game, which unfortunately has been a staple of Afghanistan politics.
We'll have more on the disputed election in Afghanistan in just a minute. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Lisa Curtis, from whom you just heard. She's a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Asian Studies Center, and Ambassador Omar Samad, a senior Central Asia fellow at the New America Foundation. We're talking about the election crisis in Afghanistan, where two candidates are locked in a standoff. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Bilal Ashraf from Karachi, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email with comments and feedback to encounter@voanews.com. And please check out and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielleVOA. And also follow us on Twitter. Well, back to you, Ambassador Samad. I want to pick up on a point that Lisa made with respect to let's say we can come to an agreement with respect to the vote count. Do you think a power-sharing arrangement can, in fact, work between these two gentlemen and their teams?
Yes, if it's tailored properly, if the terms are very clear and equitable, as I said, and it seems as a partnership and not as a one-sided show, if it is not a question of winner takes all, whether it's Abdullah again or Ghani, because I think we should not at this point or any point assume that one is the winner and the other is the loser or the number one or the number two, because I don't think that we are at that stage. It can be possible. And I'm hoping as an Afghan that will be the case. But I just want to stress one more time that the Taliban are a problem. Afghanistan's economic woes are a huge problem and burden on the Afghans. Corruption is a huge problem, and so on and so forth. And the issue of continuing the U.S.-NATO mission through a BSA, hopefully to be signed soon, is an issue as well. But let's not forget that a flawed election viewed by millions of Afghans as unjust and unfair, and maybe even to some as a conspiracy, can be as disastrous, if not more, than the Taliban or the economy.
What do you say to that, Lisa?
Well, look, I think it's important to resolve this electoral crisis. I think that the time should be taken that is necessary. I think, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on trying to resolve it before the NATO summit. Frankly, I would like to see it resolved in a way, as Ambassador Samad has said, in a way that Afghans see as credible. That's more important than resolving it before the NATO summit.
Well, let me ask you quickly before you go on. You said that you want to resolve it in a way so that Afghans see it as credible. So to what extent does Abdullah represent a majority of Afghans? Do they also agree with him that the count isn't going in a way that he sees as credible? I mean, how much does he represent Afghans?
Well, of course, he won the most votes in the first round of balloting. So he clearly has a great deal of support in Afghanistan. And not to mention in 2009, many people think he actually won that vote. But as we know, that was resolved in a way that they did not have a recount. President Karzai took power. So again, you can understand Dr. Abdullah and his supporters' frustration that a similar thing has happened twice in a row in terms of him having support, but the vote being manipulated. So that's a very serious issue. But again, I come back to how critical it is for the two sides to come to some kind of political agreement where they agree that the Taliban, you know, is a bigger threat to the country than they are to each other. And so they can come together to be able to face that threat so that we don't see what's happening in Iraq right now happen 1-2 years down the line in Afghanistan. And I just want to make one point here, which is we haven't talked much about the U.S. perspective here. And of course, Secretary Kerry deserves praise for the intensive role he's played in trying to resolve this issue, taking 2 trips there. But at the same time, people are seeing what's happening in Iraq. Several congressional members are putting pressure on the White House to make sure that it's not withdrawing U.S. troops too quickly. We all realize there has to be a bilateral security agreement for any U.S. troops to stay post-2014. But at the same time, if that agreement comes through, there should be no rush to removing those troops. President Obama has laid down the hard and fast deadline of the end of 2016 for having all U.S. troops out of the country, which frankly does not make sense. There's no reason to put a firm deadline on U.S. troops. The judgment should be made on what the conditions are on the ground, whether the Afghan forces are ready to take care of their own security.
Turning to you, Ambassador Samad, to pick up on what Lisa said with respect to the Iraq analogy. She makes a point whereby it seems that the threat of the Taliban, the economy, should loom somewhat larger. In other words, there is a process underway. It may not be perfect, but it is UN supervised, perhaps unprecedented in its scale and detail. So what do you think about that in terms of the threat from the Taliban? Are they going to exploit this, you know, political dispute? And that will be to the detriment of the country and its stability, which is perhaps most important.
Right. Iraq has some analogies with Afghanistan, but also there comes a point where you have sectarian type situation in Iraq versus in Afghanistan, where ethnicity plays somewhat of a role. And in Iraq, you have ethnicity as a secondary issue and religious sects as an issue as well.
Well, so there are some differences. I do want you to address that because yes. We know that Ghani is Pashtun.
In Iraq, you have the larger, the majority community that did not share power adequately with others that caused the problem of retaliation. Is this what we want in Afghanistan? And then there's this thinking in Western capitals that the person who has to lead Afghanistan has to be 100% Pashtun because they are the ones who can deliver the Taliban to a peace table. But that is a total misunderstanding of the situation. Mr. Ghani will not be viewed as a credible partner for the Taliban, as was not Mr. Karzai. The people who have to be delivered to a peace settlement are the Uzbeks, the Hazaras, and the Tajiks, the ones who had fought the Taliban.
And
not those, a few Pashtuns.
And Abdullah supporters primarily come from these
groups. It's not Mr. Ghani who can deliver the Tajiks and the Hazaras and the Uzbeks and the others. Therefore, there is a total miscomprehension of the Afghan situation. And politics and policy has been shaped around the wrong theories of who can help the West better and who can be a better partner. I think that at the end of the day, we all agree that these two men and their teams need to work together, need to take Afghanistan out of this crisis, but they have to do it in a very realistic, very judicious and fair manner. What we are seeing up till today is a one-sided, lopsided proposition.
At the end of the day, though, as you said, they need to come together and form a government for the good of the country so that they can repel the Taliban. So the question is, again, do you think that negotiations can take place? And even if Ashraf Ghani comes in first place under the UN-supervised audit, that Mr. Abdullah would be a part of a team to confront the major challenges that Afghanistan faces, either vis-a-vis the Taliban or the economy and so on?
Yes, I think that if Mr. Ghani wins, he needs to make sure that he has Abdullah and his supporters on board as a partner, and not as a second-class subservient chief executive, whatever name you want to give it. And so I hope that within the next few days, they will come to terms on this, and they will meet halfway somewhere, and that will solve, to a large extent, the issue of how to run Afghanistan. And then we all hope that the United Nations and all the experts who have been gathering in Kabul can sort out the mess that we have inherited from two rounds of problematic elections.
And of course, we can count on both of them to sign the bilateral security agreement.
I think so.
Yes. And of course, that's critical for future
stability.
I'm
hopeful on that point.
And I'm going to give the last word to you, Lisa, to address this ethnic factor, the fact that Mr. Ghani is Pashtun, has a strong support, and that is the largest ethnic group in Afghanistan. And of course, Mr. Abdullah being of mixed Pashtun and Tajik descent. To what extent is the ethnic factor, does it play into their dispute? And ultimately, your thoughts with regard to the ability to reach a compromise so that the country can go forward and the international community can help Afghanistan and the United States also?
Well, I think I have to largely agree with Ambassador Samad that the fact that Ashraf Ghani is Pashtun does not mean that he's going to be better able to deliver some kind of peace deal. And the idea of democracy is that it transcends ethnicity. Yes, ethnic politics is there. It's not like we're trying to put our head in the sand and ignore it. But ultimately, the leader who will be able to, you know, help stabilize Afghanistan, you know, maybe bring a peace agreement, is the leader that has the credibility with the Afghan people. So I think rather than focusing on the ethnicity question, we ought to be looking at those millions of Afghans who cast their ballot and see, you know, what is their will? Who are they trying to elect as their leader? That's why the process is so important.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have more on this topic in the days and weeks ahead. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Lisa Curtis, Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Asian Studies Center, and Ambassador Omar Samad. He's a Senior Central Asia Fellow at the New America Foundation. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Dan Crafton. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.